Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain of rice.
Just want to
tip the scale.
Just
remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen, between them. And now they're really roaring. And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk. I'll declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show in partnership with Allianz.
The pick of the final round of league games saw the two best teams in the country, Galway and Kerry, play each other, and we sent men to watch it. We are going to work out what Galway are trying to do to fix whatever it was that left them short against Kerry in the All-Ireland final last year. We'll assess whether Kerry are on the way towards adequately replacing David Moran, and we're going to look at a few surprising aspects that were revealed in yesterday's match. As well as looking at Galway and Kerry, we're also going to look at the key promotion and relegation matches across all four divisions. We'll preview the league finals for next weekend, and we will look at the reasons behind the return of Stephen Cluxton. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined today by the former Mayo footballer and manager James Horan, by the recently retired Offaly footballer Johnny Maloney, and by Maurice Brosnan of the Irish Examiner. Maurice, why did Galway beat Kerry yesterday?
Well, that's a good question to start. I'd say three reasons, basically, Paul. They had their most complete performance under Park Joyce, probably outside of the kind of final last year. The best man-marking job that I've ever seen on David Clifford by Sean Kelly in terms of what he did defensively, but also on the ball. And they made the most of their possession. So they converted their chances. Their conversion was up at 70%. I think Kerry's was down near 50. If you do that, you'll generally be there, thereabouts. And they got a nice punch off the bench as well, which I'm sure we can talk about too. But yeah, systematically, it was the best, most complete performance, I would say, under Joyce, bar maybe the game against Roscommon last year. And outside of that, they won a lot of their key matchups.
So you, even though the gap was a little bit smaller than the goal, which was something of a fluke, you wouldn't put it down to the goal. You'd put it down to Galway being slightly better. Is that right?
I did think Galway were slightly better. Now, on the flip side, Kerry absolutely have a case about the goal. If there's not, Jack O'Connor certainly isn't thinking this today, but if it's not for two goalkeeping mistakes in this league, Kerry are in a league final, when you add in the Shane Ryan one against Tyrone as well. So these games are often decided by fine margins. But I think Galway were definitely better. They, as I mentioned, their conversion was brilliant. Their attack was, they were working the ball into really promising opportunities and taking their chances. They got the David Clifford matchup spot on. That was an unbelievable job by Sean Kelly yesterday, who was just a Rolls Royce of a footballer. But beyond that, yeah, I thought Galway were slightly better. They were full value for their win.
Would you agree with those reasons, Johnny?
Yeah, no, Paul, I would. I agree, Mars. I thought even though the goal was maybe fortunate, Galway, I thought over the course of the game, were the stronger team. Sean Kelly, obviously, is... Morris alluded to there, had an unbelievable game on David Clifford. Now, helped out by the Galway system, like they were getting bodies back when they could, and they smothered David Clifford several times. John Daly was, I think he's a very effective centre-back. Now, to be honest, if I was involved in a team, he's exactly what I'd like to see in a centre-back and how he plays. Very intelligent, he cover back, gets back, covers space. And I suppose from a Kerry point of view, you'd be just a small bit concerned that David Clifford is kind of snuffed out like that, like the options diminish after him, like they're very reliant on him. It's obvious when you're there as well how reliant on them they are. Now, on the other side as well, David Clifford wasn't too far off having a very good game. Like, he got a number of shots off. Like, on another day, some of them go over. And I remember one in the first half, Sean Kelly, yeah, who part of his kind of plan on David Clifford was drive him up the field, but Clifford didn't really follow him. One time, Sean Kelly actually got turned over. The ball went back up to David Clifford, and he got a shot off. Crowd cheered for a point, but it actually just went wide. So, from what I saw, like, very fine margins, and Galway were just that bit better yesterday.
That turnover was interesting because it happened to Galway a couple of times and Kerry got after them.
Yeah. Especially in the first half, I felt on the turnover, Kerry were very impressive in transition. Like, their kicking game was very good and they were really punishing Galway in turnovers. A number of times when, say, like, the build-up was slow and Galway were kind of getting into kind of a set attack, when Galway had a turnover, they were wide open, like, and I was just waiting for a goal to happen, and it didn't. I think one stage they fluffed one, was that Paddy Clifford maybe dropped a ball, but Thomas Sullivan picked it over and chipped it over the bar. That really should have been a goal. And I remember another instance as well. There was another turnover, and it was basically a foot race between Paddy Clifford and his direct man. A ball over the top, Bernard Power kind of came for, then had to realise he wasn't going to get it, went back in, ran back into the goal. It was another handy point. And in the second half, whatever Galway did, in fairness, to kind of shore that up. And Galway might kind of say, oh, we were turned over the ball too easy. But there's also, you're going to turn over the ball during the game. There's also, I felt it left them spells a small bit over open on the turnover. And maybe something for them to kind of look at in terms of maybe keeping that back door shut, not being as vulnerable, I suppose, to a turnover.
It was interesting you mentioned Bernie Power there and the goals. He had a very good game yesterday.
I thought he was excellent, to be honest. Thought he varied his kickouts really well. He's very comfortable going short, picking out either cornerback on kind of out onto the wide near the sideline. He can go long as well. He can't maybe kick quite as long as Gleeson, but like, he can still get it out there. Like, in my view now, Park Joyce is a big decision to make in goals. Like, from
Who would you put in?
I'd pick Bernard Power. I don't think there's any. From my point of view, I definitely would. Yeah, Gleeson's a fine goalie, but there's kind of maybe a bit of he's made quite a few mistakes now under the high ball, say, and then his kick out, he's very good at getting out long, but in terms of short, teams playing Galway realistically are targeting that as well, whereas I think Power is far more comfortable on the short kick outs. I suppose that's probably maybe from playing with Cora Finn, he probably has a bit more exposure to that kind of style of football. And for me, he made a number of excellent saves as well. I thought he was really, really good. Like, he's really given Park Joyce something to think about in goals.
What do you think of that, Morris? Who would you go with there?
Bernard Power as well, I think. I think it's a huge call for Galway now. That's a great thing. All over the field now, Galway suddenly have options. The big criticism, and I mean, I said it too, of the All-Ireland final last year, was that they didn't have options in reserve. But now suddenly you've got... It'd be very interesting to see... Does Patrick Kelly get back into that forward line, and who comes out if you don't? Like, Carl Sweeney he's probably a very kind of unheralded player. And we spoke about him here, Paul, after the Mayo game and the way they failed to close out that game, epitomised by him. Since then, he's been such a versatile player for Galway. He's kicked great points against Donegal, and then he goes back and does a job on Paddy Clifford, in as good as probably anybody in the field could have done yesterday. So you'd be very encouraged by that. You can't really drop him. So where does Patrick Kelly come back in? Does Ian Burke get back into this team as well? That's another interesting one. So I think finally they have options. But yeah, on that particular call, I'd go for Bernie Power.
And Cook and Maher around the middle are a big help. And the further development of Matty Tierney, who I have to say, Matty Tierney, I saw a lot of Sigerson Cup football this year with being involved with UCD. And Matty Tierney is the best footballer that I saw in the Sigerson Cup this year. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. So around the middle, Galway are very powerful now.
They are. And not to go over all ground here, but the John Maher story is remarkable, lads. Like, this guy was not deemed good enough to be, and probably fairly, in a squad for the last 2 years. He made his debut against Mayo. We talked about this previously in 2020 when they were annihilated, and you weren't sure if he was ever going to play for Galway again. And he wasn't exposed to a senior setup, and comes back in and kicks 2 points against Kerry, looking absolutely at home in Pearce Stadium. He had a brilliant impact against. He came on against Tyrone and Tuam as well. It was great that day. And again, against Donegal a week later. For him to be effectively parachuted in and look totally at ease is fairly remarkable. Peter Cook looked like he was never away. He is absolutely flying as well. Like, they're getting a huge lift off the players who've come in. Probably a more lift than they would have anticipated. So I think Galway, there's no team got more out of a league than Galway did, because they made a league final, but they've unearthed a lot of exciting new prospects as well.
Why do you think they lost the All-Ireland final last year?
Their bench.
They just didn't have enough. They had nothing to bring in. Or nothing, yeah. Not enough to bring in, to be fair.
Yeah, I thought they went stride for stride with Kerry for, you could say, maybe an hour. But with those last 4 points Kerry rattled off, they're getting a big impact off their bench, and Galway didn't have it. They were picking off by the end of it, their team was pretty predictable, and they weren't getting the same impact off the bench. So yeah, I think they didn't have option in reserve. There are small things within that as well. Like Johnny mentioned it there, and I'm just looking at based off numbers, and it's interesting that Johnny can just sense it based off feel, but there's no team better in the country on turnovers than Kerry are, and they kind of ate Galway alive in that regard in the final last year. So that was part of it too. But if you want to pick one nice shiny factor. It was their bench, and they've gone some way towards resolving that issue over the last couple of months.
James, do you think describing them as the two best teams in the country is unfair or fair?
They're up there, obviously. I think Mayo's form of the league obviously has them up there as well, and Tyrone are accelerating at a rate of knots that's coming there, and obviously Derry, but certainly just on what the guys are saying there, Galway are, poor Joyce has to be just licking his lips, really, at the moment, how the league has gone. And it's funny, you know, I heard him being interviewed yesterday after the game, and you know, they've unearthed a lot of new players. He had absolutely no choice. You know, if you look at the injury rates that Galway had, and that was the same. That's the same with a lot of counties. You know, sometimes when you have no choice, the best choice is no choice. You know, you throw players on there, and it's sort of sink or swim. So a lot of the new guys, and particularly defensively, how some of the guys are playing for Galway, he'll be delighted. And there's definitely something different about Galway. It's like there's an energy around them. Even the crowd yesterday, all that kind of stuff. To me, it's slightly different than what Galway teams have been over the last number of years. Like Galway a couple of years ago, there was all that going out to Pearce Stadium in a windy and playing that type of football, and there was all that sort of negative energy around them. That's definitely changed. You know, the enthusiasm of the young guys that are coming in, you know, the under 20, the win on that, some of the games last year, particularly against Armagh, all that kind of stuff has Galway, you know, and the energy around them in a very good place. And I not to labour the Sean Kelly thing, but what a player and leader he is for them. You know, when, even yesterday, when the team needed something, or when it was, you know, Kerry were coming back, Galway just needed something, just Sean Kelly just injected purpose into the game and just let them out. So look, overall, you know, Galway was delighted. Jack, on the other hand, I would say, you know, back to your question, two best teams, I'd say that Jack is definitely not a happy camper this morning. Yeah, there's a goal in it, and there was, you know, it could have gone either way, but it's not necessarily the result that he's looking at. It's where's their improvement? Where's Galway's Kerry's improvement since last year? What's making them more of a threat in potential threat in this year's championship? I don't see any additional threat. If anything, you know, at best, you know, they seem to be just holding the line, or maybe backwards a little bit. You know, Galway definitely improved. Mayo definitely improved. I don't know if Kerry have that influx of players. You know, you could list off a load of Galway players that are playing well, and the new guys that are coming in. You know, Johnny McGrath, Dylan McHugh, Keane Hearn, and all these guys are bringing energy and something to the team. I'm not seeing that with Kerry. So they have a lot of work to do. They have some time to do it, but certainly
they don't play for a month. It's interesting, isn't it? They don't play for a month, and in a month's time, they play Waterford or Tipperary. I think it's the winners of Waterford Tipperary. They play in the Munster semi-final in a month. That's means you're coming. They're, we have to be realistic here and say they're going to win that match, judging by the form of Tipperary, relegated from Division 3, Waterford stuck at the bottom of Division 4, near the bottom of Division 4. So that's a Munster final against Cork or Clare or Limerick in 5 to 6 weeks' time. It's coming relatively quickly.
Yeah, and I suppose if I was to ask you, who are the new players that we've seen throughout the league for Kerry that we think will make a real difference to their panel come the serious end of the All-Ireland Championship? I suppose I that's where I'm, and Donal Sullivan, a couple of them, Roach has done pretty well, done okay, but you know, Jim O'Connor coming back, Paul Ganey coming back, they're okay. We know about them. But I suppose it's that new, that, you know, those new players that have that threat about them. Just not seeing that. So Jack has a lot of work. But if you haven't seen them at this stage in the league, are you going to get someone between league and championship outside, you know, returning injured players? I don't know if you are. So Jack has definitely a few things to think about.
Were you talking to Jack after the game, Morris?
Paul, someone tweeted us, that's a very productive question. Somebody tweeted us during the week that you should be the host of the Late Late Show, or at least be a contender to take over as the host of the Late Late Show. Now you, you tried to pin
that's
James
not helpful,
down.
Morris. No. Well, that's not helpful.
As you, I'm sure you know, I was. you're obviously referencing my exchange with Jack. For people who don't know, just for context, after this game, I asked Jack about their long kickouts. Was it a concern that they only had one successful long kickout in the game? And he asked me what exactly was I concerned about. And I tried to kind of, when you're explaining, then you're losing. But I was trying to clarify the point they're trying to make, right?
You're trying to be helpful, Morris. Right? You're trying to be helpful.
You've got in football, you've got the three primary. The reason that I would do this is because you're watching a lot of games and you're looking at the three primary sources of your scores. So you can score from a turnover, you can score in the opposition's kickout or your own kickout. That's totally basic. As it happens, there's been a team throughout this league that Kerry don't score a lot after own kickout. So just for example, yesterday, Galway scored 4 points after own kickout in the first half alone. I think, you know, 7 points that Kerry scored in total was on turnovers, but they scored four in total off their own kickout and the others were on Galway's. And that's been, Paul, you go back, like it's just one thing that I've noticed again and again and again. Teams are actually giving it up to Kerry short. So they gave it up to Armagh, gave everything up short, as we talked about. Armagh scored more on their kickout that day than Kerry did. Kerry scored 2 points on their own kickout against Roscommon last week. Now they destroyed Roscommon's kickout. They've got one of the best presses in Gaelic football. They scored 1-5 off Roscommon's kickout, but they only scored 2 points on their own. It was the same thing against Tyrone, as I talked about previously. It just so happens that I've brought this up twice ever, I think. And one time, with two of the best managers in the 21st century eyeballing me in Jim and James. And the other time, I have a four-time All-Ireland winner asked me what has me concerned. So maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here, but it's definitely, it is a team. And I'm still kind of adamant that it panned out yesterday as well.
Yeah, but you're dealing in facts, aren't you? As you see them.
Yeah, lies, damn lies and statistics, I suppose.
In your impression of the game, from what Morris saw from facts there, from your reading of the game, unstated, where would you stand on Morris's point?
So when I was watching it, I was just trying to take in as much as I could. The first few kickouts, Kerry went long and they actually they looked dangerous actually. They won a few balls in behind. And I felt after that, Galway kind of made a little tweak and they just said, right, we're going to actually give the ball to Kerry and let them work through us. And from then on, just Galway were way more comfortable. Yeah, the game didn't feel as much on Kerry's terms. Like Galway were able to, I suppose, from the kick out, just get organised. They all came outside the 45, gave it to Kerry, and up to Kerry now to bring it the length of the field. And to Morris's point, from that point on, outside of the turnovers, Galway looked really comfortable. I felt they controlled the game insofar as they could, with and without the ball. Like, so, I'd agree. I didn't know those stats now, but Kerry need to maybe look at maybe why that is. I don't know. Is it an over-reliance on certain people transition the ball, certain people winning kick passes in certain positions, like in opposition, identifying that and getting tight in these key individuals and just making it real tough for them? And then Galway just been very organised. But at that level, all the teams that Kerry play are going to be seriously organised. You'd have to be... Kerry probably needs to do a lot of thinking on that, because it's hard to see them winning on All-Ireland with those stats.
Yeah, and this—that's the bar, isn't it? It's the bar is that All-Ireland. Also, is that your first time to see David Clifford in the flesh?
Well, no, I saw him actually. I was at one of the Mayo Dublin finals, and he played a minor final against Galway, I think. So I saw him that day, and then that's my first time seeing him play for Kerry seniors. To be honest, that is definitely the first time I saw him play in the flesh for Kerry seniors, and. Yeah, I was looking forward to it now. I think he's the best footballer in the country. So just to see the battle with him and Sean Kelly now, it was worth the admission fee alone. Like, there's no step back from Sean Kelly now. He plays right on the edge, and Clifford gives as good as he takes now as well. But it wasn't one of David Clifford's best games. But as I mentioned already, he wasn't a million miles off getting a few scores, like, and being the difference too. So. I don't think if Galway played Kerry again, I don't think they could actually even dream that they'd have the same impact in terms of trying to take David Clifford out of the game. Like, I don't think that'll happen again. So, look, even that point alone, Kerry would be better if the fixture had to be replayed again. Like.
Yeah, James, you know when you go to, when you, you know when you're managing Mayo, when you were managing Mayo and you would go and watch other teams playing, you go to the ground, what exactly are you looking for? Is there anything in particular you're looking at?
There's an awful lot from going to a game that you can tell. You know, a lot of the performance stuff, you know, there's a lot of video review you can do, you know, but around the game, there's a huge amount that you, what in my opinion, that you can get, you know, like particularly league games, because you can, you know, if you get positioned right, you can hear and see a lot of the things that go on, you know, from the sideline right through to the player. So when we were doing that, there was an awful lot we'd go through. We'd firstly look through, you know, who's the energizers on the team? Who's the energizers on the sideline? You know, so who's doing the talking, even in the warm-up? You know, who's organizing it? What players are sort of leading it? You know, to who on the sideline is doing what? You know, even their body language, how they look, how they feel. So you look an awful lot around that. You know, you'd look at the management team, you know, who's on the sideline, who's doing the comms, who sort of gets agitated, who keeps their composure, who's the decision maker. You know, again, you can tell a lot from that, you know, just the hierarchy or how it works. And again, that might give you some bit of information, but on the field as well, you know, who's doing all the connections, like, so who's holding the lines together, who's holding the structure together, who's doing the conversations, who likes to keep their position, who, you know, who's shouting at the guy in front of him to go or to stay or to hold or whatever it is. So, you know, there's an awful lot of information like that you can get. You know, how do they react after there's a scenario in the game? You know, who's, again, jumping up and down on the sideline? So there's an awful lot of little things that can help and can support, I suppose, your prep for a game. You know, for example, if there's a player that likes to stay in structures, you know, and is doing all the organizing, how can you maybe pull him or drag him out of a position that he does, you know, that he doesn't want to move from? And then what does that do to others that might impact the rest of what the team does? So there's an awful lot. How they react to the crowd, you know, or what the crowd do, you know, when there's an event in the game. So you're just sort of analyzing that sort of information to see is there some angle or some edge that you can use in your prep or the language that you use in your messaging during the week and the lead up to the game. So there's an awful lot you get from being there that you wouldn't necessarily pick up just watching it on TV.
Do you know what was interesting, James? Yesterday, Jack, the stat just happens in Pier Stadium, the layout of that stadium, the stats box is right beside the press box in the stand. And for the first half, Jack O'Connor sat up in the stands beside Paddy Talley. And it happened to be right alongside me and their two analysts, JC O'Shea and Colin Traynor. I'd say the two boys were delighted to see my happy head staring over, looking to see what software and hardware they were using. But yeah, for the first half, he spent entirely beside Paddy Talley looking at structure. I went down then towards the end of that and stayed down for the rest of the half.
Yeah,
Morris, there's a thing about it. When you're in the press box, is there much chat? Amongst the reporters,
there's loads of chat, yeah, and you have to be careful of that too, Paul, because it can influence your opinion of what's going on. Or I would much rather grounds if I can sit closer to analysts. I tend to do it. It's just a trick of the trade. You'd pick up on even small stuff if you can overhear. Not that I would use it in copy or anything, but if you can overhear small stuff, small messages, it'll give you a good indicator of something happening in the game. I'll give you an example. I did a league game earlier this year, and I heard somebody shouting on a mic. It's all down the right-hand side. Everything is down the right-hand side. And I remember thinking, what is he after seeing there? So I went back and watched the game back. And when I was tagging it or doing analysis, suddenly I realized that a wing back who had 4 assists. And now this is a guy who can spot that live in the moment, which is, I'm very jealous of that eye. But yeah, you'll pick up on small stuff that maybe unheard of stuff if you're sitting close to there. So I'd much rather sit as close to the stats box than the press box as possible.
Johnny, you played basically a dozen years for Offaly. Did you ever go and watch in the flesh players who you were going to be playing against?
It was very difficult to do that, Paul, because you're normally playing obviously the same day or the same weekend. Just logistically, actually going to see them play in the flesh is probably not possible. So you would be reliant on analysts or whatever to give you clips or whatever, but from an awfully point of view, unfortunately, that probably only happened in the last few years, believe it or not, that actually got that. We got actually to the level where we were getting that kind of information. And before that, like, the odd fellow was sent to the game and he come back with an A4 pad, kind of photocopied and handed out to you. This lad likes his left foot. He goes out and the first ball he gets, he spins it over with the right. So I suppose, yeah, you get the analysis packs the inter-county teams get this year are like a very, you know, you will get a good feel for who you're marking. But like in saying that, like sometimes I think it was Chris McCaig or something, I heard him saying like sometimes you just get the clips, you might just get a clip of a lad receiving a ball and turning, kicking over the bar, but you've no context to the score. Like, was it off of a turnover? Was it from a kick out? Like, what was his movement like before that? So in terms of actually going to watch it live is a huge advantage, like, if you can. So the more you get to see these players and how they move, like, especially if you can go to a match and you can afford to kind of maybe zone in on one particular fella, I think the learnings from that are unbelievable. That, like, a video, unlikely to ever give you the same kind of experience unless maybe you get the kind of the view from behind the goal as well as the standard view that you normally would get. You'd have to look at both of them, and the time in that time that will be involved in that as well will be significantly more. So, like, going live definitely is the way to go, like, if you can at all, because you can see so much, you can see what you want off the ball, off the camera, you know.
Johnny, did Mr. Mahan change all that? Was he the guy that upgraded the whole thing?
To be fair, when John came in, yeah, we started to get that kind of information before that, and just trying to think. It was probably the year before that, and Stephen Wallace was there, to be fair to him, and Billy Sheaton. They were getting us proper clips on teams. So that was 2018. So you can imagine before that, we zero, absolutely nothing. Like, it's madness, like, you know. And then, you know, from an awfully point of view, and teams lower down, like, I'm sure we weren't the only team, like, and then we're trying to go out and be the best that we can be when we're already hamstrung. Like, we don't, I'm not saying we're going out trying to win all Ireland's or Leinster championships, but we want to be the best versions of ourselves, say.
Sure.
And when you're going out in hindsight, looking back, like, and you're thinking, sure, what were we even, we'd no hope, like, we didn't have a chance.
And, so listen, tell us, what was it like under Mr. Mahan? I'm fascinated to know. How did you find it?
I get on great with John, you know, to be honest. He's a great old character, as you should know yourself. I actually had him with Sigerson in NUIG years ago. So I knew him from then, and then he took Offaly for 4 years. And look, he made me captain there on my final year with Offaly. And something I was very proud to do for myself and my family and that, so. And no, I've gone great with John. I suppose when he came in, he kind of came in fairly low ebb. And Paul Rouse was a lad. Paul Rouse after taking us there, and things were in Poway this summer.
Impact.
And then John came in really to try an impact. Like, job manager bounce was easy after Paul.
Yeah. The only way it was up, right?
John came in, and look, the first year, I think we actually beat Sligo down in Clooney to stay in Division 3. And I suppose from then he kind of steadied the ship. I suppose he got us to Division 2, and if I'm being honest now, last year we would have been desperately disappointed not to stay up. I remember actually it's sad to say now, but I was chatting Liam Kearns obviously during the winter there, and he even rang me even up to a month ago, like, because Liam had great plans for next year, but he was saying, geez, I was looking back at all your Division 2 games last year, how did you not stay up, you know? So it was it was disappointing now that we couldn't have consolidated Division 2, because for the likes of us who's trying to build, for Offaly trying to build, like, seeing that progress is what players want to see. And if you have progress, you avoid the player turnover, which I suppose is the ultimate kind of thing that kills all the teams in lower divisions, is player turnover. Like all the top teams, I'd nearly be able to name your Mayo panel, James. You know, I'd know all the players fairly similar every year, a few new faces, but in the main, like, the same players. Same with all Division 1 teams. Monaghan, case in point, I suppose.
Yeah, we have to talk about Monaghan. Monaghan's success in staying up again, James. How did they do it?
I didn't think it was going to happen this year. Now, you know, the way they started the league, but look, they have a lot of good players. It was Vinny Curry, you know, even the way they sort of celebrated yesterday, you can see they're a tight bunch. They have Conor McManus still, but, you know, we talked about that guy a few shows back, and what a player, you know, what a player to have on a day like that, you know, where you need to bring out a win. But they're a robust team, Paul, that you know, there's an honesty about them. And as I said, that sprinkling a good player, you know, you go through their team, they're decent players. They've never had the biggest panel in the world and have struggled with that over the years. But you know, in a dogfight, you know, and look at their season pros at it now at this stage, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know, fifth year in a row. But look, it's not where you want to be. You know, you're in Division One when you're on the edge. From really game one, you know, you lose your first game or your second game, you have no points on the board. It's a very hard environment. Then I would say it's not a learning environment. It's not a really strong coaching environment because you're doing everything each week just to make sure you try and get a win at the weekend. You know, so that development of players or development of a system or whatever it is takes a back seat, you know, till you try and lock in. So it's not ideal. No, you get a jump, obviously, I've seen up, but it's not ideal throughout the 7 or 8 weeks of the league to develop the team. But look, they're in there, and they'll be.
What about Armagh, James? What about Armagh?
I think again, we've talked about Armagh, and I don't understand them. I think is the term I used there 2 weeks ago. It's a bad relegation. It really is, you know. You know, from where they were last year and what they would have been looking to achieve, and you know, some of the half performances they put in throughout the campaign. You know, they've had, you know, periods or 20 minutes, or you know, you take that Mayo game, you know, the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or whatever it was, and the performance they did. But I think they hamstrung themselves with over analysis of their structure and their shape and what they should be doing. You know, you go back to the game against Kerry and like, okay, people don't said, you know, I remember reading the analysis that, oh, I understand why they went so defensive. I don't. You gotta set yourself up, yeah, to mind the house, but try and win the game. And I'm not sure they were doing that correctly or getting that balance right. So I think they've got themselves in a knot and ultimately, you know, got relegated. So not sure what, you know, how long, if it's a nick in the quad, you know, that can be a period of time to get Rian O'Neill back and get him. Then when you get him back, there's return to play and there's return to performance, you know, how good he'll be and when he'll be back to himself. So not good. And the energy around it, you know, a relegation like that won't be strong either, you know. So yeah, a few headaches there for Armagh, but I just think they need to, yeah, have a known structure for themselves, but free themselves up a bit to basically have a better structure in their attack. I think I don't think they have that balance right. And it, to me, now look at, I'm only looking at it from the outside. It doesn't look clear to them what exactly they're trying to do or how they're trying to win that game.
Yeah, and there is the role of their goalkeeping and how they go about that in the game seems to be interesting, and the increasing prominence of the goalkeeper in the attack as against it being an add-on in the past. Next weekend, James, Galway Mayo. How big of a game is that in the longer term? As obviously it's a big game in itself, it's a league final, but in the longer term, how important is it?
Yeah, and just for that, the Ethan Rafferty thing, I'm not sure, I'd be interested in the guy's thoughts on that. I'm not convinced how beneficial that is. I don't know, Morris, have you data on that the, you know, look at Ethan got a goal or whatever, but you know, what's the return or what's the benefits? What's the, you know, if you analyze that in the cold with cold data, what actually is the return on that versus what it does to the team and as regards how they need to set up when the goalie does go out, etc., and who covers back and all that kind of stuff. So I'm still unconvinced by that. It still leaves certain defenders vulnerable or they're not sure. So while Ethan might come out and be strong on the ball and it looks this new creative approach to attack, and I'm still not convinced it's something that's hugely beneficial. When you're setting up so defensively organized, you know, so you don't concede, is there not still significant risk with the goalie coming doing that often that frequently in games. I just not convinced it's all bells and whistles like a lot of people think it is. Right. So no, anyway, that's something maybe we can. Yeah. I don't know, Morris. Go on. You're dying to.
But like, not to go like too inside baseball here, but there's a package a couple of intercounty teams would use. An analytical package is it basically it ranks every single player's possession and how impactful it is based off the score. So what it does, like, it's just very basically here, right? You would rate every player's possession. It could be, you know, it could be something like a link play, a positive, negative is obviously a turnover or whatever. And at the very end of it, you would see the outcome of each score. So you could see, in a sense, if you look at it over a season, you can see the pluses or minuses. You can see how, if a player passes through Paul Rouse's hands, how much likely are we to score versus if it passes through Johnny
Almost
Moore's
certain,
hands.
Maris. Almost certain.
And you can see, you'd get a fairly good ranking. And as it happens, when the ball passes through Eaton Rafferty's hands, so say, let's say, for example, I'll tell you, like, Johnny Heaney ranks so highly on this. That's like, if for whatever reason, everything, if the ball passes
Johnny Heaney hands, at centre forward, by the way, is a huge step by Galway. And it's really improved their attack.
Brilliant, yeah, brilliant player.
We can come back to that, yeah. But if the ball passes through Johnny Heaney's hands, Galway are much more likely to score. If the ball passes through Eaton Rafferty's hands, as it happens, they are more likely to score versus when it doesn't. Now, on the flip side of that, though, I watched this game. I came home last night and watched this game back because I have nothing better to be doing. And I thought that Armagh, the penny dropped. I have to say, I thought Armagh finally started to move towards a much better setup. As it happens, Rafferty wasn't as involved yesterday. Mm-hmm. Their attack was way better. Conor Turber took over for the freeze and did pretty well. From the very first moment, he catches that mark out in front. Now, I kind of wish he took on McMahon and the offensive mark didn't exist, but I'm sure there's a broader conversation there. I really thought that the penny dropped. Philly McMahon was on co-commentary. Was this on BBC? Thomas Lindelof was the commentator. Philly McMahon was on co-commentary, and he mentioned Armagh's warm-up, the whole thing was Stupie Campbell was standing out on the wing, cutting in off onto his left and off his right. So I was curious to see how that would work out, and didn't he go and kick 5 points? So I thought yesterday, for 60 minutes, they were right there, they were level. Now, we can talk about this if we have to, but I thought Aaron McKay was blessed, absolutely blessed not to be sent off. Like, those shoulders, if you catch a fella high like that, I think that's a stonewall red card. But besides that, I thought Armagh were really good. Like, that was the best performance bar maybe the last half hour against Mayo that I've seen this year. Now, why did it take 7 rounds for that to drop? I would wonder. And why couldn't you kick a ball? I'd say Rian O'Neill was sitting in the stand looking at the ball Conor Turbitt was getting in the first half there, wondering why. Why can I not do that? But
isn't that, Mars, that's interesting. Isn't that something to analyze? Like, why was their attack and play maybe so much stronger without Rian O'Neill there? And the positioning and how they played with Rian O'Neill. Rian O'Neill's a brilliant, brilliant player, but not influencing the games enough or as much as he should be with the ability that he has. So that's definitely something that will add to their armor as well. When they figure out how best to utilize him.
Yeah, we have to talk about Dublin, but we are talking obviously about Stephen Cluxton. Dublin won yesterday, but we have to start with Stephen Cluxton. James, why is this after happening?
Wow. There's when you bring someone back in like this, right?
What's your gut reaction?
Yeah.
When you heard Stephen Cluxton was back in there,
I got more WhatsApp photo. You know that photo of Mormo? I got more WhatsApp photos. I didn't know what was going on. I thought something serious happened to Cluxton or something. But it's funny. You go straight through it. I don't know. Maybe it's just a manager for so long. Wow, because there's pros and cons to every decision you make like that to bring someone back in. Even though it's Stephen Cluxton, there's still pros and cons to it. So you got to weigh up how many pros or how positive beefy is as a team. But I'm not surprised. I think Dublin in Division 2, and you even saw it in yesterday's game against Slough, they look vulnerable in defence. They look a bit unsure, so they're crying out for leadership. Right? They're absolutely crying out. James McCarthy is coming strong with it. But you know, even Mike Fitzsimons, a brilliant player, just looks like he needs a bit of support. And I think Stephen Cluxton around will certainly help a lot of those players, or provide confidence, or give leadership. So I think, you know, he's been captain for how many years? He's won how many All-Irelands? He's been the best goalkeeper in the history of the game.
Second best.
Yeah, we can get
Martin
that.
Martin Furlong.
Yeah. I actually knew that was going. Yeah.
First ever goalkeeper to win Footballer of the Year.
Yeah.
Three All-Irelands with Offaly, which is about, like, that's like winning about 14 with Dublin. Like, that's okay. We'll move on.
We can do a full podcast on that, Paul, in the future.
My 15 Offaly heroes. Johnny, yeah. Don't worry, you'll be on the bench. You'll be fine.
So look, he's a real leader. You know, you hear players, or you pick up, I suppose, over time what the players in the dressing room think of him. And, you know, he's sort of a Johnny Sexton type, Roy Keane type of figure now, in a very different demeanor now, but that authority that they have around the dressing room. So look, huge positives from that side, you know, no question. And like, as a manager, I assume that Desi would have gone to the James McCarthy's and the senior players and sat down, look, here's what I'm thinking of doing, here's the reasons why, and get some of those players feedback, you know, before he'd make the decision. I assume that would have happened. So there's a group there that know what's happening, and it helps, you know, Wells, Stephen Cluxton back into the culture. But there is going to be players, and it might necessarily just be the goalies, that won't be fully happy with that decision. It's just the nature of sport. No matter how good Stephen Cluxton is, there's guys that have put in a load of work, load of time, load of effort, think they're making progress, all that kind of thing, and then you see this guy coming in, and, you know, okay, if you're one of the goalies, you're thinking, what the hell do I, you know, what's going on here? Going back to a 41-year-old, and you all that goes through your head. So there is negatives to it, that you got to weigh up. But when you stand back and from where we are, and you look at it, it does make perfect sense. That a guy of his leadership capabilities, I'd say, goes in there, because I think it's exactly what Dublin need.
Johnny, do you agree?
When I saw this, it was halftime of the goal Kerry game, I actually started laughing. I was loud nearly. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. Like, I didn't know what to think. I didn't understand. First of all, I presume he's coming in because they have Evan Comfort's long-term injury. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, his long-term injury, unlikely to play this year. So if David O'Hanlon, who's been playing really, really well, goes down, that they have Cluxton there to come in. But listening to, I think Desi Farrell was saying that Stephen will probably want to play. So straight away, David O'Hanlon's going to be looking over his shoulder. So he's going to be unsteady. So now there's a bit of indecision with David O'Hanlon, you'd have to think. Cluxton, they're on about, I was driving back home from the game, Kerry and Galway, and I was in the car and I was listening off the ball. Joe Molloy and Paddy Andrews were talking. Obviously, Paddy Andrews had a bit of the gaff there where he didn't even know that Cluxton was out warming up until Joe Molloy pointed out to him in studio. But Paddy Andrews was saying that it'll be brilliant for the standards and all this, you know, the standards he'll drive the team on, you know, very important. And Joe Molloy's making the point, when the summer comes, you know, the press is on the kickouts, Cluxton's the man. I was kind of thinking, Gini, like, Brian Fenton has, I don't know how many All-Irelands, how many footballers a year. Kilkenny is an unbelievable leader. Anytime he's needed, he stands up, kicks a score when it's needed, gets on the ball, unbelievable leader. James McCarthy, one of the best players I've ever seen play.
Of all time, yeah.
Jack McCaffrey's on the team. Mike Fitzsimons has 8 All-Ireland medals. Like, are these boys not, are their standards not high enough? Like, I'm sure they are, like, do you get me? I think it's kind of a thing that's just thrown out there, like, there's no way that them boys don't have unbelievable standards, that they need Cluxton to come in and drive the standards. Cluxton passed that kind of on to them, in my view. So I assume why my and I could be naive in English, I assume that Cluxton, they're unsure of their second goalie, clearly. The third goalie is Michael Shields. I'm not sure if he injured as well, or if he's not, like, I don't know, he'd be hanging around.
The under-20s goalie is injured.
And the under-20s goalie, like, I'm sure... Basically, Desi's kind of thinking, look, if anything happens to David O'Hanlon, I need someone really reliable. And he put in the call to Cluxton. Cluxton being Cluxton, like, when he was needed and he knew he was needed, he'd come in. It's not about Stephen Cluxton, I'm sure, 100%. Like, it's about Dublin football and what's best for them. So, look, they've made that decision. They think it's best for them. So, We'll see how it pans out. But to me, it's more of a personnel issue rather than standards and all that sort of thing.
But Johnny, I don't know what your thoughts on this. There's no way, and I think Desi alluded to this, there's no way Stephen Cluxton will come back in just to be a number two. It goes against everything that he sort of was or is as a player. If he does come back in and he is sitting on the bench or even number three or whatever it is, he won't be happy. He will not be happy with that. So he could possibly be a negative.
This is the complexities of all this. Like, as you said at the start, every decision, you know, you have to give something to get something. Like, do you know what I mean? So these are the complexities now Desi Farrell has to deal with. Like, and what's it saying about the future? Like, he's 41. Oh, like, he's not going to be the goalie in three or four years, or even is he next year? Like, he could get injured. Like, I'm 32 now, and I've noticed, like, recovery and all that, as much as you try, you're going to pick up little knocks. Like, I know he's a goalie, but like, he is 41 years of age. Like, time waits for no man. Like, what is this saying about Dublin, especially in the goalie situation going forward? Like, are they thinking it nearly could send out a message that, like, this is the last hurrah, we're going for this one, and then after that, if we get another one, I don't know, will we? Like, but we're definitely going to go for this one. We're bringing in Cluxton, everyone getting the band back together, and we're going for it. Like, so I don't know. The messaging to me is, look, it could work out. Dublin have unbelievable players. Like, I mentioned a lot there. I didn't even mention Conor Callaghan, who isn't playing to his best. But if he does hit form, like, another outrageous footballer. Like, I think David Clifford's the best. Next best is probably Conor Callaghan. Like, so, like, I don't know. It's very unusual, I think. I think it has to be. I wouldn't understand why, if you're comfortable with your goalies, David Hannon's playing well, and you're number two, you're happy with him, why you'd bring Cluxton back in. Like, last year, Evan Comerford didn't win the All-Ireland, but nothing got to do with Evan Comerford. Played really well. They had no huge issues on their kickouts. Like, it's where Dublin never conceded a kickout when Cluxton was in goals. Like, Evan Comerford did really well. So, I don't know. It's a very unusual one. It'd be very interesting to see how it pans out. Like, but to your point, I think Cluxton will be looking to play, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is come challenging.
James, I have a question for you. Would you bring Lee Keegan back into the Mayo panel?
No. He's too busy training for the marathon at the moment. He's training for a marathon. I see him running around Westport. He's an absolute madman. He just can't stop running. It's just, even though he's retired from Intercounty, he's still running.
I don't think Mayo will win the All-Ireland as things stand. I don't think Mayo will win the All-Ireland as things stand. I think if you put Lee Keegan back into that panel, then Mayo's chances of winning the All-Ireland increase significantly.
Yeah, look, again, knowing the character, like, the easiest thing of the lot would have been not to let him go. I mean, build a wall there and just not let him out of there. That would have been the easiest thing. But he thought long and hard about it. You know, so look, a lot of it is the player and where he is in his life and that kind of stuff. You know, but you sort of know as a manager, guys, that you would or really want to come back, or there's something that's impacted them from coming back. So if you can help them with that, you know, you get them back. But look, Lee Keegan, like, the season he had last year, you know, playing cornerback and still running the, you know, creating more opportunities from cornerback, I'd say, than any cornerback last season. So he can still play intercounty football. But it's whether the player has, if the attitude is there, and that's what makes Lee so great, is his attitude. If there's a part of him that really just wanted to call it a day, then you'd leave it at that, and you'd pick that from the conversation.
I wouldn't leave it at that. I'll tell you why. You have Conor Loftus doing a fine job in that six role, the way they're playing him. Lee Keegan coming into that position, 15 minutes left in various matches, particularly at the business end of the championship, in a season where the Sam Maguire is going to group stages, three games on the bounce, into a quarterfinal, semi-final and final, six games in basically 8 weeks or thereabouts. You need a squad for that. And I know Mayo squad is very strong, and I know that Lee Keegan immediately improves that squad.
Yeah, but again, you can look at it that way, absolutely, and I think it would, but look at how Jack Coyne, look at how Enda Hessian, have their development has accelerated this year. If Lee was there, they wouldn't have got as much game time. You know, so maybe there's two players that have flourished because Lee is, you know, so you can look at it, you can look at it a number of ways, but look, he's made a decision and he's gone. So it's not, you know, if you're Oshie Mullen, you can keep going on and on and on and on, you know. And yeah, every team like Mayo over the last 5 years, the amount of players that they've lost, and a lot of those players, in theory, I think I've said this before, could have played another year. No question about it. But there comes a time, and you know, they can feel, the player feels themselves when they're, I think Johnny was saying there, you get a couple of knocks and bangs, hard to recover, you're not yourself. So you're in Croker, like Lee might be in, say, to take that example, might be in Croker this year and not, just can't get to the level he was last year, and then gets a bad doing from a young up and coming player. You know, so all that factors into their decision. So look, time moves on, you know.
Morris, how did you not know about this? You're a GA reporter in the country, finger on the pulse. How did you not know about it?
I'm obviously not a very good GA reporter. I don't know. I think the mechanics of how they kept under wraps are kind of amazing. Like, it's absolutely incredible that there seems to be no word of this anywhere. But Paul, just to circle back to something you said there, I think you can't, like, we're not in a good spot to adjudicate whether or not stuff that might seem inconsequential, but is very significant, the impact it would have on a squad if you bring a guy back, like what it would do to people's mentality, what it would say to the players that James just mentioned there, if a guy who hasn't been around for an entire preseason, hasn't put the yards, is suddenly parachuted in and is playing ahead of them. I think that is not an insignificant factor within all this. So if you're bringing a guy back, you have to set him on, it has to be a role. Like, it has to be, the best example of this that I can think of this century probably is Mike McCarthy for Kerry.
Mike McCarthy, yeah.
Kerry had a big problem at centre-back, and they went and found a perfect solution. Whereas you look at maybe on the flip side of that, Paul Galvin came back and there wasn't a specific role for him there. And maybe they didn't get the lift that they anticipated from that. And I wonder to what extent, how it impacted the squad just beyond that as well. But just to your point, this is what Dublin do. They drop their stuff in very seamlessly. It's part of the organisation. So it was a total and utter surprise. And I mean, Johnny mentioned that he started laughing. You'd want to hear what the talk of the press box, the noise in the press box. It was like a pack of hyenas when we saw him come up on the screen. But it is also very kind of understandable. It's predictable in a sense that Dublin managed to keep this under wraps.
Yeah, I'm just appalled. A couple of weeks ago, I was in the upstairs bar of Kyo's talking to a guy from another Dublin club, not Cluxton's club, who asked me a very pointed question. If I'd heard whether Stephen Cluxton was back in for Dublin, and I kind of laughed at it and didn't go on. And I'm so disappointed with myself. But he asked me again about 40 minutes later. In other words, did I know? And he was basically telling me without knowing me.
Paul, we missed the scoop, man.
Missed the scoop. I am absolutely disgusted with myself. Absolutely disgusted.
Not even a Late Show researcher could find that information.
Yeah,
Paul,
yeah.
You're threatening your card here.
It's not helping, Morris. Not helping. We Dublin were kind of comfortable against Loud without being terribly impressive. We'll be talking about Dublin again in the next couple of weeks. In Division 3, Fermanagh, again, an outstanding achievement. We're going to talk about Fermanagh over the next couple of weeks as well. But I want to talk about Division 4. I got a text from the Wicklow manager last night who wanted to know, is there going to be a full show devoted to not just Wicklow, but also him. I think we need a full podcast series on what Oisín has done in Wicklow. And all joking aside, I admire what he's done there to come in. And after the first two games, when a draw with Carlow and a loss to Sligo, and you're thinking this is going to be a fairly long spring, I'm finding this really hard to give that man a compliment. But fair play to Wicklow for getting ahead of Waterford at the end of the day and getting promoted. But the game of the weekend, Sligo Leitrim in the Division 4 decider, Johnny, like what a game to win for Sligo.
Yeah. Yeah, unbelievable win, and by all accounts, tremendous game as well. Like the crowd down in Leitrim really got into it.
It's a great place to play football, isn't it? It's a great ground.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, look, I've played a few league games down there down through the years in the middle of February, and and March, and yeah, it's not
not great ground, not Johnny, right?
It's not the prettiest place to be, like, especially when it's a heavy pitch,
Paul, if you ran it, man.
Yeah.
I was in college with a few lads from Leitrim as well, like, and they're unbelievably passionate about their county, like, of football especially. And to me, Andy Moore is doing a great job there. I know they didn't get promoted, but there's definitely, you can see big improvements, I think. Far more organised in their systems play, like getting the best out of Keith Byrne. I think they were unlucky with injuries there this year as well, but they just came up short against Sligo, who are definitely improving as well. Like, Sligo are a good side. I've played Sligo, I don't know how many times, to be honest, because they were in Division 3 when we were. So, look, unbelievable win for Sligo to get out of the Division 4, because it's not easy anymore. The standards after evening out a lot, like a lot of Division 4 teams would be mid-Division 3 standard. Like, there's not a whole lot between them. Like, last year in the Talton Cup, we played Wexford and Wicklow, like, and, you know, that we were, I suppose, coming down from Division 2, and both those teams probably every bit as good as a lot of teams in Division 3, or not much between them anyway. Like, it's all on a given year, how organised you are, what personnel you have. Have you avoided player turnover? Like, have you got a good pre-season? Has everyone got pre-season? The right players especially. And, look, unlucky for Leitrim, but hopefully, if I were them, I'd be pressing for Andy Moore to stay, because you can see improvements. And I know there's a championship to come, but in terms of, like, going forward for them, like, you know, they're definitely making strides. And in Sligo, they need to get back up to Division 3, and I suppose to push on from there. As I was saying earlier to the lads there, for the teams lower down, it's all about seeing progress, like, otherwise you won't hang around, like. So
it's interesting, though, there's more than progress at stake here, though, isn't there? Because one of these two teams with London might turn something around in the next couple of weeks, but one of these two teams is going to be in the Sam Maguire competition, because one of them is going to make a Connacht final.
Yeah, and they're going to be risky, looks like, playing one another. But that game now will even be more tasty, if you know what I mean. Because
yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, because by all accounts, Leitrim could have won yesterday. So, like, Leitrim are going to go in there with, I suppose, two things: knowing that they can win, and two, a point to prove. And then Sligo kind of have to back up what they've already done. They can't do the same thing again, you know, to be analysis. Everyone will be aware of what the other team did in the last game. Like, so there'll be a lot of dynamics there that we won't even be aware of, like, without seeing that game, you know. So, yeah, that would be probably, that could be one of the games of the championship, you could actually say, like, because when you get two teams at a similar level playing, like, the entertainment factor is always, it doesn't matter, like, the standard is good, like, it's inter-county football, like, the entertainment factor is going to be there, like, so that'll be a game I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for.
Just on that, yeah, and I agree completely, Johnny. I think when they come, if they meet in the championship, gee, that's definitely a game to go to. That will be that'll be huge for both teams, because what it brings. But yeah, and Andy would be disappointed. But I heard him yesterday, Paul, we might touch on this again. If Leitrim did win yesterday, that, you know, they'd be playing that on the Saturday or Sunday or whatever next weekend. And then
next Saturday evening it was meant
to be, following Thursday, they'd be heading to New York for the championship. Like, if you just think of the mechanics of that, and I've been in that situation, going on that New York trip with the team a couple of times, it's a nightmare for a start. For a championship and everything, that there's events organized around and there's everything else. But you've guys that have played a long league campaign, a lot of them have played Sigerson, a lot of them are working, all that kind of stuff. And then you got to turn around and go straight into a championship. You're flying, you know, across to America to play a game and then come back and into championship. It is insane. I heard Andy after the game yesterday, and he was livid with the expectations of the players, and I couldn't agree with him more. You know, it's very unfair what's expected of players now. The condensed season and everything else has been, it is what it is. I'm still not convinced it's the right format, but that's for another day. But there's an expectation of players now, or not even an expectation. People don't even consult the players. It just, the structure's put in, dates are put in, and just go with it. So I think it's unfair at the moment what's expected of players. There was all this burnout discussion. Do you remember a couple of years ago, everything was going to cry to a halt, and what these unfair managers were doing to players and all this kind of stuff. And what did we do? We came up with this split season format that rams the competitions on top of each, you know, almost three competitions on top of each other at the one time, the provincials, the Sigerson, and the national, start of the National League, and we go straight into that, straight into a championship, and then go straight from that straight into a club. So to me, there's going to be a lot of fall off, a lot of injuries, a lot of players just saying just can't keep up that hectic schedule. So I think there's a lot that's needed there. So just when Andy said it, I think it definitely warrants.
So he has a point, and he does have a point, and we're going to come back to this. Against that, we have heard a lot of players coming out and saying they like the split season because they can concentrate on their county and then on their club. I think the change has to be within the nature of the games that are within the inter-county window and how the competitions are organised. What I will say, though, and I don't want to be trite about this, and I do take Andy's point, but if somebody told me I was playing in Croke Park on a Sunday afternoon and then flying to New York on the Thursday, I think I'd take it as a way to spend a few days.
Sure, but your employers might have something different to say as well.
Yeah, true. That's,
you know, there's a lot of implications. Like going on a Thursday, you know, means you have to train for, you'll probably try and, you know, train or get together, get on. Look, at all I'm saying, Paul, based on my experience, there's a huge amount to it. And it's tough on players, and they're away for 4 or 5 days then and back, and they probably have to miss a few days from the following week of their work and that kind of stuff. So we just need to think through it. I don't think it continues as it is, particularly the start of seasons, the way it is.
No, I agree. It's too condensed in terms of what the expectations are. I have no argument about this. What I will say, Morris, is I don't think there should be league finals. I think a league is a league. I think this weekend should be just a free weekend for everybody.
That's a realistic solution, purely because that's the elephant in the room here is the provincial system. We're just talking about Kerry having 4 weeks off now before their next game. They're going off to a training camp over the Easter holidays. It looks like it's going to be confirmed later that the request to move the league final to Saturday is going to be denied. So they're going to be out on Sunday, and then they're out in the championship first rounder a week after. This is the elephant in the room, is that for all this nice, shiny new structure we have, the provincial structure is a total impediment to any sort of realistic calendar where you could have a equitable system where teams have an equal gap between games. So until we fix that, we're going in circles. Can I just make one small point? The last time Leitrim went to New York, they were blessed to escape with a win. And they spent a lot of time, I think they had to go to Ballyhonest, James, to train on the 3G pitch there to get ready for the surface. They don't have the opportunity to do that now because of how close this game is going to be against New York. The strongest I've seen New York from watching them play over the last couple of years was against Sligo last year. And you add in the fact that it sounds like, you're hearing all sorts of whispers about this, we don't know, but it sounds like they have the same squad that they had last year, plus they've thrown in the likes of Gavin O'Brien from Kerry as well. That's not an easy game for Leitrim to bounce back up there. I know we're all getting excited about Leitrim Sligo rematch. They have to get over that first. Like that'll be a huge test for them. And they don't have, as we just mentioned, they don't have a big window to prepare for it. So, but yeah, to answer your question, Paul, get rid of league finals, sure, I'd have no issue with that, but it's a realistic solution because the proper solution is not attainable, and that's getting rid of the provincial system.
Yeah, but when you think about it, right, the discussion for Mayo and Kerry and all the top teams over the last number of months is to avoid a league final. But that's crazy. The league is a brilliant competition. It's an absolutely brilliant competition.
I agree.
But yet, halfway through it, your teams are almost thinking of pulling on the brakes because they don't want to get to the final and win the competition. Like, so we've created a situation that just doesn't make any sense, you know. So definitely league final is one. I think there's a couple of weeks that can be squeezed, you know, in between Sigerson, league, get rid of league final. So there's two or three different options there that just give you a couple of weeks. That's probably enough for, you know, because to give teams that, you know, everyone a fair crack at it.
I agree with your point, James. I agree with your point on the league final. You know, people not wanting to be there, and that's why I say no final, but win the league in a straight out way, so you don't have to play a team twice. Like, if you were Derry or Dublin, how are you approaching next weekend? How big of a game is it for you if you're Derry and Dublin?
Well, for Derry getting a national title in Croke Park, beating Dublin in Croke Park is absolute. That's huge for your building. It's part of the whole building process, and I'm sure Rory will build it that way, you know. So that is an important one. I'm not sure when Derry are out in their championship. I don't know how long of a break they have, but no, that's still a huge game. And for Dublin as well, it is a big game. You know, beating Derry and Croker and Rice, we're fully lined up now. We're all pointing their own way, and away you go. You can kickstart your season, you know. And you asked me earlier on, didn't get a chance with the Mayo Galway one. It's sort of similar. That's the two of them. You can pick it up from Borac Joyce. You know, he yesterday, how long it's been since Galway won the national, da, 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 all that kind of stuff. So he's absolutely gunning for that. And it's funny, it's a big game for Mayo as well. Mayo have been excellent, well above the majority of teams in the National League. And yeah, Monaghan is easily explained away and all that, but it's still a defeat. You know, Mayo go into a league final. The last thing you want to do is lose to Galway in Croke Park in the national final. So
yeah,
the way it's led up, the four teams that are in Division One, Division Two finals, they're going to be cracking. They're going to be cracking encounters that are important for all the teams involved.
I think it's a big game for Mayo. And I was looking at, and I do agree Mayo have had a good league, but I think there are two warning signs for Mayo, not closing out the day against Armagh and the amount of scores they're conceding. Like, I Morris might correct me on the facts here, but I think they're conceding the guts of 15 points a match. And that's fairly significant in this time of year. Now, they're playing very open, free-flowing football. It's very good to see, but that would worry me a little bit. So I can't wait to see them next Sunday in Croke Park. I'm really looking forward. I'm really looking forward to that game. Thank you, lads, for coming in, for joining us today. Thank you very much for joining us, Johnny, James. Thank you. Thanks to William Morris. Thanks to Larry Ryan for running the podcast, to Raf Rocca, to Jack Neville, to Tony Lean, and to everyone at Examiner Sport. Thanks to Allianz for their support. Bemidji Hearn Ashkelua.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.